Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. The time now is 9:30, and Chair Gilmore, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Margie. Good morning, everyone. And as stated by Margie, it is 9:30, and this is a meeting of the BCDC Enforcement Committee is hereby called to order. My name is Marie Gilmore, and I am the chair of this committee. For commissioners, including those of you attending at Beale Street, please ensure that your video cameras are always on.
Recording in progress.
Please mute yourselves when you are not speaking. Our first order of business today is to call the roll. Adrian, would you please call the roll? Commissioners, please unmute yourselves while she does this to respond, and then mute yourselves after responding. You're muted, Adrian.
Thank you, Chair Gilmore. Good morning. Chair Gilmore, I'll start with you.
Here.
Commissioner Eisen?
Here.
Commissioner Vasquez?
Here.
And I believe that's it. We have a quorum of three.
Thank you. We have a quorum present and are duly constituted to conduct business. Before we move on to item three on the agenda, please note that item six has been postponed. We will not hear item six today, and so if you were here for an update on Union Point Park, that item is postponed. We will reschedule that briefing for a future date. So that brings us to item three on our agenda, public comment. So in accordance with our usual practice and as indicated on the agenda, we will now have general public comment on items that are not on today's agenda. And I believe we have not received any general comments in advance of this meeting. Margie?
We did receive one general comment, not on the agenda, and it will be posted today.
Okay, thank you. And I believe that Commissioner Veland has just joined us, so welcome and thank you. Good morning.
Morning. Sorry, I'm a little bit late.
No worries. Okay, so for members of the public who are attending online, if you would like to speak either during the general public comment period or during the public comment period for an item on the agenda, please raise your hand in the Zoom application by clicking on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and look in the box where your name is listed under attendees. Find the small palm icon on the left. If you click on that palm icon, it will raise your hand. Or if you are joining this meeting by phone, you must dial *9 to raise your hand, then dial *6 on your keypad to unmute your phone when the host asks you in order to make a comment. The meeting host will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they were raised. After you are called upon, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please announce yourself by first and last name for the record before making your comment. For members of the public who are attending in person, please queue up at the speaker's podium and wait to be called upon to speak. Commenters are limited to 3 minutes to speak. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We are here to listen to any individual who requests to speak, but each speaker has the responsibility to act in a civil and courteous manner as determined by the chair. We will not tolerate hate speech, direct threats, indirect threats, or abusive language. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines. Margie, do we have any commenters today?
Yes, we do. We have Chris McKay. Mr. McKay, you have 3 minutes. Mr. McKay? Mr. McKay? Okay, I think he has a problem with his speaker. So, Chair Gilmore, we have no other commenters.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anybody at a remote location that's willing to speak? I don't think so, but I should ask.
Yeah, we do not have. Actually, Chair Gilmore, we have another couple speakers online.
Okay.
First up, Brock DeLapp. Mr. DeLapp, you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Brock DeLapp. I'm extremely concerned about the fact that the Union Point Park matter has been removed from today's agenda. I hope you both have, the commissioners have had a chance to review the documentation that I've sent regarding the influx of encampments into Union Point Park and the problems along the shoreline. It was in 2019 that the east parking lot at Union Point Park was totally packed with RVs. This was a very dangerous situation. There was a bad fire that burned up several vehicles. A 7-year-old boy was shot. It was complete lawlessness. And in 2019, the city of Oakland removed those vehicles from the east parking lot. The park itself was overrun with homeless encampments. And in March of 2012, under a cease and desist order, the city of Oakland removed those encampments from Union Point Park. At that time, the park was deemed to be a closure area, which meant that no reoccupation was to occur. Unfortunately, that has not been supported by the city of Oakland. The park now has numerous encampments. It's not being tended to, and I can imagine why the City of Oakland Park Service would not want to go into the park to try to cut the lawn or pick up the trash because of the existing encampments. And as it is, it would not be used by the general public. On the shoreline, there's an encampment in the old Cryer Boatyard site, which has been the location for several stolen boats. There are boats anchored offshore illegally in the estuary off of the east parking lot, which people have seen stolen property, stolen outboard motors that cannot be recovered. So once again, the park, for lack of enforcement, lack of involvement by the city of Oakland, has been allowed to go into disrepair. And I think the public has a right to know why this item was removed from the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Chris McKay. Go ahead, Mr. McKay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm not sure if you can hear me. Okay, thank you very much. A year ago, Union Point Park had encampment on the north end and the south end, but the center of the park was clear. At that time, working with the Parks Department, we brought in about 30 school kids for 2 days, and they picked up litter, planted trees, removed graffiti, and just really got the park looking great. And they enjoyed participating in it, and it was a good exercise for them. And it was at this time of the year when they were still in school, but it was time for planning and cleaning the park. This year, a year later, they can't come because there's encampment spread throughout the park, and the school won't allow them to come in. as long as there's encampments in the center of the park. So nothing's going on. The trees they planted are not being maintained. Litter is everywhere. People are driving through the park in vehicles and destroying the turf. And there's a huge structure built next to the playground. So what's really frustrating about this is not so much the city isn't doing anything, but they have $23 million of unspent funds from Measure Q that was specifically designed for the parks, for litter, for improvements, for interventions in encampments, and they've done nothing. According to the agreement that was signed 3 years ago between the park and BCDC, BCDC can now fine Oakland about $6.5 million based on the $6,000 a day fine for not keeping the park clear. I would ask BCDC to enforce that fine. That may be the only thing that gets the city to take care of a park. And our neighborhood association keeps all the areas clear, and we have a nightly security patrol. But the one thing in our neighborhood that we can't control is the park. And the park is actually controlled by BCDC, so we would ask you to enforce this and do it as soon as possible so we can get these kids back in and get them involved in using and taking care of their park. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. Next, we have Mike Gorman.
Hello, this is Michael Gorman. Can you hear me?
Yes, you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners, and especially Chair Gilmore. Good to hear you and see you again. I am director of the Antonelli Yacht Club Junior Sailing Program in Alameda. We've been severely impacted the last couple of years over thefts and vandalism at our facility, boats in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000 stolen, and many other boats from the Alameda Community Sailing Center and other private parties along the shoreline of Alameda and Oakland. Most of these vessels and motors have been recovered at the Union Point East parking lot or the boats adjacent to the shoreline there. Unfortunately, we've had to do it on our own because the police response is not adequate and not quick enough to do anything. I go by there almost every day because I work in the vicinity. I work at a facility that's been severely impacted also by having its customers' boats and motors stolen. We have photographs of those at the Cryer Yard encampment next to the Coast Guard Bridge. Also, on the beach right now. One of them is on the beach right now this morning at the East parking lot, and also at the board boats off the East parking lot. The Oakland Police Department Marine Unit has made progress in the last 6 months to get rid of some of the illegal anchor outs, and many of them have been part of the problem. But there are still a few left that don't seem to be have any action taken on in any timely matter. The park itself and the parking lots are a disgrace. There's large motorhomes that have been there at least 6 months. People line up and buy something from the windows and doors most mornings. Not sure what they're buying, but it's probably not hot dogs. There's structures and tents erected in the park itself, and it's very discouraging to any member of the public who wants to take a stroll along the boardwalk or the shoreline walkway or use the park. In fact, I think most people would just turn around and go the other way. I, too, am very curious as to why this very critical item, lack of enforcement, has been postponed. I can't see any reason why it should be put off. So just like Mr. DeLopp, I'd like to know the answer to that. Please, please do something for our neighborhood and our waterfront community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe that's all we have, Chair Gilmore.
Thank you, Margie. Item number 4 is approval of the draft minutes from our last meeting, and we have all been furnished with draft minutes from that meeting. So, committee members, I would appreciate a motion and a second to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion from Commissioner Eisen and a second from Commissioner Vasquez. Anybody opposed to approving the minutes? Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved unanimously. Okay. So we move on to item number 5, which is a hearing and a vote on recommended enforcement decision to resolve ER 2021.080.00 Bayview 1 LLC. So it's a presentation and a vote on a proposed recommended decision to adopt a cease and desist order to be issued to Bayview 1 LLC, owner of record of the subject property ER 2021.080.00, which is located at 660 Bridgeway in Sausalito, Marin County. If this committee votes to adopt this recommended enforcement decision, which includes the proposed order, it will be put up for a vote of approval or rejection by the full commission at its April 4th, 2024 meeting, which is scheduled to be held online and in person at the Metro Center, which is located at 375 Beale Street in San Francisco, and the meeting will start at 1 p.m. So after BCDC staff gives its opening remarks, the respondent will be invited to present their remarks. Then I will allow public comment on this item, and afterwards, we, the committee, shall hold our discussion and vote on the staff's recommendation. So at this time, will the representative or representatives for the respondent please identify themselves for the record? Respondents?
They're just being promoted to panelists now, I believe.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Chris Henry. I'm the owner of the building, and I'm here to respond and answer any questions and to give you my side of the story.
Great. Thank you, and welcome. Thank you for being here. Okay, so we are now going to hear presentations from the staff and the respondents. Each side will be allotted 20 minutes to deliver their presentations if needed. Each side will summarize its position on the matters at hand with particular attention to those issues that are in actual controversy where that exists between the staff and the respondents. Presentations made by the parties, as well as any public comments to follow, shall be limited to responding to evidence already made as part of the enforcement record. This committee shall not allow the introduction of any new evidence or oral testimony. So I will now invite enforcement analyst Rachel Cohen to give her opening remarks. Rachel, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gilmore. Just a second for me to share my screen, please. Let's see. Does that appear in full screen for you?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good morning, all. Today, I'll present enforcement case number ER2021.080, for which the respondent is Mr. Chris Henry and his company, Bayview One LLC. This case involves a long-standing obstruction to permit-required public access and unpermitted redevelopment activities in BCDC's jurisdiction. Mr. Henry's nearly 15-year history of failing to comply with the terms of his BCDC permit and the McAteer-Petras Act has caused staff to commence a formal enforcement proceeding to restore public access. Here's our outline for today. We'll go through the location of the violations, history of noncompliance, timeline of events, violation summary, defenses and rebuttals, and finally the staff's recommendation. These two images are vicinity maps at two different scales of 660 Bridgeway Boulevard, Sausalito, Marin County. Originally a ferry terminal, this privately owned two-story building is now the home to restaurants and shops in downtown Sausalito. This is a clean scan of the plan, which is Exhibit A to Permit M1979.088.00. Bridgeway Boulevard is over here, if you can see my cursor, to the west, and the bay is over here on the eastern side, and the building is here in the middle. There's a faint red outline on the 1,558 square foot public access area, which wraps around the southern and the eastern sides of the building, and also includes the staircase landing pad on the second floor, which offers members of the public an elevated view of the bay. The original permit in 1979 allowed for renovations to the ground floor restaurant, Il Piccolo Cafe, and repairs to the deck support structure, and required landscaping, public trash containers, and no fewer than two benches to be made available to the public. The access area provides sweeping bay views and a connection to the Yi Tok Chi Park to the immediate south. This dark blue polygon, if you can follow my cursor, approximately outlines the space which used to be used by Il Piccolo Cafe. And then moving on to this black rectangle, the second amendment to the 1979 permit allowed for 155 square feet of the public access area, which is approximately outlined with this black rectangle, to be used for outdoor dining with tables and chairs that were accessible to the public and to patrons of the cafe. The authorization to use the public access area for outdoor dining ceased when the cafe closed around 2016. This photo was taken in March of 2022 from south of the building facing north. The public access area is partially shown here under these overhangs. This plywood in the picture blocks part of the public access, but it is meant to wrap around this eastern side of the building and go up the stairs here. This photo was taken on March 3rd, 2024. From the southeastern corner of the building facing southwest. The public access area again includes this area under the overhangs and this walkway. And then kind of in the same position, but just turning around, this photo faces northeast, and these are those stairs that ascend to the second floor deck. This slide shows where BCDC's shoreline band and bay jurisdictions are. This is just to show you that nearly the entire building is within BCDC's jurisdiction. So now that we've reviewed the permit required public access requirements, I'll review the history of noncompliance at this site before circling back to the current violations. Mr. Henry took over ownership of 660 Bridgeway in 2007, and as you can see from this long list of prior enforcement cases, violations of the permit under Mr. Henry's ownership began in 2010 and have regularly occurred since then. There were six cases between 2010 to 2016, which dealt with restaurant staff refusing to allow members of the public to use the public outdoor dining tables. Restaurant staff were telling members of the public to either purchase food or leave the area. For two of these cases, Mr. Henry was fined $100 for repeating the same violation within 5 years. Two cases dealt with the failure to post required public shore signage, and a 2021 case addressed unauthorized outdoor dining tables. I want to focus on ER 2016.013 when Mr. Henry announced his intent to construct a new restaurant space by using the former Il Piccolo Cafe and demolishing and expanding into the neighboring business suites within the building. Mr. Henry was informed in April and September of 2016 that he must obtain a BCDC permit amendment prior to commencing this project. However, despite staff's warning, Their November 2016 site visit revealed that much of the public access space had been blocked off, and construction of the restaurant renovation project had commenced without BCDC permits. Staff initiated standardized fines, and Mr. Henry submitted an incomplete permit application for the project. After more than a year, Mr. Henry failed to complete his permit application, and it was returned unfiled. Since construction had stopped and the public access was restored, staff closed the case in June of 2018, and Mr. Henry was fined $21,000 for the violations. When staff notified Mr. Henry that the case was being closed, they again reminded him that his property was within the commission's jurisdiction and governed by the 1979 permit and the McAteer-Petras Act. Staff told him that he must seek and obtain a BCDC permit amendment prior to recommencing his project, or a formal enforcement action would be initiated. Mr. Henry nonetheless reinitiated this project without obtaining approval, and this is one of the subject projects of today's enforcement case. So moving on to our timeline for this case, in August of 2021, staff received an enforcement report which alleged that the respondent was again obstructing the public access pathway with plywood and tables. In September of 2021, enforcement staff mailed a violation notice initiating an enforcement action and standardized administrative fines. Staff of the second floor restaurant, the Barrel House Tavern, replied and said that the public access path had been blockaded by plywood due to a fire, and that staff of the fire department instructed them to close off the back patio. BCDC staff requested documentation of the fire marshal's direction, but never received it. Staff also informed Mr. Henry that the City of Sausalito's process is separate and distinct from BCDC's. Later that year in December, enforcement staff asked for documentation from Mr. Henry that the public access had been unblocked. Mr. Henry's response indicated that the public access remained blockaded, and he provided no date by which he aimed to reopen the space. In March and December of 2022, and also in April of 2023, staff visited the site and documented the persistence of the violations. The shoreline public access had been completely blockaded, and unauthorized work was occurring on the ground floor public access area and within the ground floor commercial space. The entire public access area was being used to store furniture, construction materials, and trash bins, making it unusable to the public. In December of 2023, a member of the public emailed staff photographs documenting that development activities had expanded again, to include raised wooden flooring, a high-top bar, and a new glass wall railing in the public access space, appearing to staff that Mr. Henry intended to privatize the public access space for use by the new restaurant. Enforcement staff then notified the respondent that the opportunity to resolve the case using standardized fines was no longer available. On January 24th, 2024, enforcement staff issued a violation report and complaint for administrative civil penalties to Mr. Henry, and on January 31st, he confirmed he had received it. Since the 1979 permit runs with the land and has not yet been formally assigned to Mr. Henry on paper, staff requested that Mr. Henry complete a permit assignment form. He agreed to work on completing the permit assignment form on February 6th, but we still have not received one. On February 9th, Mr. Henry pledged to send documentation that he had made the public access area consistent with the permit. He also pledged to submit an after-the-fact permit application. On February 27th, 2024, staff spoke with Mr. Henry, Millard Arterberry, the designer and architect for the restaurant renovation project, and Tim Galusha, Mr. Henry's friend who is a lawyer. Staff explained the enforcement committee hearing process and the statement of defense form due date, and staff again advised Mr. Henry to apply for after-the-fact authorization for the fire repairs and interior restaurant renovations, since both occurred in BCDC jurisdiction without BCDC approval. Staff encouraged Mr. Henry to apply for a non-material amendment to the 1979 permit instead of a region-wide permit, stating that permit staff may require additional public access in lieu of the years of closure and unauthorized work. On February 28th, 2024, staff received Mr. Henry's application for after-the-fact approval of the fire repair project. Despite staff's recommendation that Mr. Henry apply to amend the 1979 permit and include both the fire repair and restaurant renovation projects, the application was for an abbreviated region-wide permit for fire repairs only and excludes the restaurant renovation project completely. As noted earlier, on March 3rd, 2024, BCDC staff conducted a site visit and observed that wooden barricades were still being used to block much of the public access area, and other portions of the public access area were being used for private storage of restaurant materials and rubbish, and work on the interior of the restaurant appeared incomplete. Despite Mr. Henry excluding the restaurant renovation project from the permit application, he did submit the project plans. The image on the left shows the former Il Piccolo space here and a wine bar and retail space across the hallway. And as you can see on the right, the restaurant has expanded into the former wine bar and retail space, and fill has been placed internally, consisting of new restrooms, a new kitchen, a new dining room, a new office space, and likely more. There's also red shading here to illustrate part of the public access area. There's a clear intent here to place tables and chairs for the restaurant throughout the public access space on the southern as well as the eastern sides of the building. In sum, violation one is for the unauthorized redevelopment activities on the ground floor of 660 Bridgeway Boulevard in BCDC's Bay and Shoreline Band jurisdiction. And violation two is for closing, blockading, and removing the required public access amenities and intending to privatize the public access area for restaurant use. Respondent submitted a statement of defense form with attachments on February 28, 2024. In it, Mr. Henry admits to owning the property subject to the complaint, that work was performed to the back deck, and that he installed plywood to block access to it. I'll now move on to the seven defenses and rebuttals. Defense one is that respondent received building permits from the City of Sausalito for the restaurant remodel work. However, receiving a City of Sausalito building permit does not absolve respondent from his responsibility to consult BCDC prior to performing work in BCDC jurisdiction, to obtain BCDC approval for the work, and to comply with the McAteer-Petras Act. Additionally, the separation and distinction between BCDC and the City of Sausalito's processes was explained to Mr. Henry in writing in 2021. And even if it had not been, Mr. Henry is still responsible for obtaining BCDC authorization prior to placing fill within or making any change in use of any area within BCDC jurisdiction or any change to existing required public access. Defense two is that nobody mentioned anything to Mr. Henry about having to get BCDC approval for the restaurant remodel work. Despite it being solely Mr. Henry's responsibility to comply with the McAteer-Petras Act and the regulations applicable to his property, staff explicitly informed him three times in 2016 and 2018 that he must obtain a BCDC permit amendment prior to commencing this project. Defense three is that nobody mentioned anything to Mr. Henry about having to go through BCDC to get approval for the fire restoration repair work. Mr. Henry should have known that he needed to consult BCDC. Staff repeatedly asked him for documentation that the fire department directed closure of the public access area, and staff informed him that the blockade was a violation and asked him to remove the sheet of plywood that was blocking public access. Defense four is that Mr. Henry was directed by the City of Sausalito Building Department and the fire marshal to install plywood and block access to the back deck as it was unsafe from the fire. The McAteer-Petras Act requires any person to receive BCDC authorization before making any substantial change in use of any water, land, or structure within BCDC's jurisdiction, such as closing the public access. BCDC has procedures in place to respond to instances when emergency work is required, yet there's no record of Mr. Henry proactively informing BCDC about the fire and the need to close public access areas for emergency repairs prior to or just after the repairs occurred. There's a history of correspondence with Mr. Henry that demonstrates that he should have known that he needed to inform BCDC about the closure of the public access area. And lastly, we have never seen documentation that the fire department directed him to close the deck. Defense 5 is that Mr. Henry went through the required channels of the city and was issued a permit. However, Mr. Henry did not go through all the required channels to receive approvals for the fire restoration and restaurant renovation work because BCDC is a required channel. The case history demonstrates again that Mr. Henry should have known that he needed to inform BCDC about the closure of the public access area, yet Mr. Henry did not voluntarily apply for a BCDC permit until he was subject to this enforcement action, and the permit application is not inclusive of all the work that was performed. Defense 6 is that Mr. Henry did not add any fill. And while staff concedes that the footprint of the deck is the same now as it was before the unauthorized work was performed, Mr. Henry expanded the original restaurant space by demolishing and utilizing the adjacent commercial spaces. Mr. Henry changed the use of the area by reducing public access and views, placing impediments within the public access space, and intending to privatize the public access area for restaurant use. He removed public trash containers, removed a public bench, added a standing bar in the bench's place, added raised wooden decking, a new glass deck railing, and the plans for the new restaurant illustrate his intention to place restaurant dining tables and chairs throughout the public access area. All of these activities require BCDC consultation and authorization. Defense 7 is that the administrative civil penalty would possibly bankrupt the respondent or put him out of business, and Bayview 1 LLC employs many different people, and they and their families rely on the respondent for their living. The statement of defense form allows respondents an opportunity to express whether they will be unable to pay the proposed penalty or whether paying the penalty would have a substantial adverse effect on their ability to continue in business. However, since information relative to these considerations is exclusively in the possession and control of the violator, Appendix J of the Commission's regulations requires violators to submit factual information and supporting documentation to enable staff in the Commission to evaluate their financial condition. Examples of relevant supporting documentation that a violator should provide include audited financial statements, balance sheets, profit and loss statements, statements of net worth, tax returns, and more. And since no factual information or documentation was submitted to support this claim, staff cannot consider this as a viable defense, and the respondent's ability to pay is not in question. To review the proposed administrative civil penalty, Appendix J of the Commission's regulations requires staff to assess certain characteristics when settling on the appropriate fine amount, including but not limited to the respondent's degree of culpability, history of violations, any voluntary resolution efforts, any economic benefit to the violator, and other factors. Our analysis determined that for each violation, the gravity of harm for this case is moderate, and the extent of deviation from the statutory requirement to provide the permit required public access and secure a permit or remove the unauthorized fill is major. Daily penalty per violation was assessed for 937 days, during which time the respondent failed to take voluntary action to correct violations. Fines for each of the two violations are capped at $30,000, so staff proposes a penalty amount of $60,000. Moving on to our recommended enforcement decision, we recommend that the Enforcement Committee recommends to the Commission to authorize the Executive Director to issue the proposed cease and desist and civil penalty order number CCD 2024.001.00 which would order the respondent to cease and desist from violating the permit and the McAteer-Petras Act, to fully restore and maintain the public access area within 30 days of order issuance, to obtain a permit or permit amendment for all unauthorized work by the end of 2024, to complete a permit assignment form for the 1979 permit within 45 days of order issuance, to cease and desist from any development of the ground floor restaurant space, formerly Il Piccolo Cafe, and the adjacent wine bar and retail space, and to not conduct any business or other use of the space until a commission permit that authorizes such use is obtained, and to pay $60,000 in administrative civil liability within 30 days of order issuance. And that concludes the staff's presentation, and I'll stop sharing my screen now.
Thank you, Rachel. I think I'm going to hold questions until we hear from the respondent. So is he still on the screen? Mr. Henry, could you please make your presentation? And I am just going to remind you that you are limited to discussing evidence that's already part of the enforcement record. So thank you, sir, and you may begin.
Okay, first of all, can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great, thank you. Well, thank you for being here today, and thank you for having me. I appreciate that. I wanted to go over a few things with you here and correct and make clear a little bit more of actually what happened. As this is not, what you previously heard is not all, you know, factual and true and kind of brushed over. First off, I've always complied with BCDC, requirements. If there's something that needed to be done, I always did it. And there was a problem with the previous tenant that was there, Piccolo Cafe. He's the gentleman that provided the initial plans. And he's the one that did all the violations, prior to him vacating, as mentioned back in 2016 and all those previous violations, they were his responsibility. He did that. I didn't do that. So I just wanted to make that clear. And every time BCDC stepped in, I made the tenant comply. And as far as I know, everything was cleared and benches were, cleared off. Garbage cans were installed. The previous tenant was the one that told the public they had to sit there and, buy a meal from him. It wasn't me. I had nothing to do with that. And when I found out about it, I corrected that. I just wanted to make that clear that I've always complied. There was a problem with getting notifications as I moved during COVID. It's just been the restaurant business was just a disaster. And I moved and I didn't receive any notifications from BCDC from about 2020 when COVID hit. I moved. So I didn't know about all the notifications that that were alleged in this complaint. I didn't find out about even this hearing until I was notified by my attorney that Rachel contacted him. This was the first that I heard about this whole situation, about the hearing and the noncompliance for going back to 2021, because I never received any notification from you guys. During COVID, I moved away and my address changed. And there was a fire at the back of the building that destroyed the whole back part of the building, the deck, the back part, the restaurant part downstairs, the storage area, and the back stairs were completely burned. Back in, I believe it was 10/27 of 21. I went through the process with the city for fire restoration. Complied, you know, hired an architect and engineer. We supplied all the plans, went through the process with the city. We had several hearings, went through the Historic Landmarks Board. We received approval after two hearings there, and we went through the process. Nobody ever told me that I had to go through BCDC. I was not aware of that. Otherwise, I certainly would have. I hired an architect, submitted the plans. The application was approved, and we didn't add any fill to the project. It was all the area that burned, we replaced in kind. We didn't grab any extra space anywhere. The only thing that was different was there was a seating bench on the back part. We put a standing rail there, so actually you could get more people in there to stand and view the bay. It was mentioned that we closed off the back portion of the building since 2021, and that's true. That's because we were directed by the fire marshal. It was unsafe. The back deck, where there was holes in there, people, you know, if it was open to the public, people would walk in there and fall in the bay, and it would be just a disaster. I would get sued, and it just wasn't safe. And I didn't know that my manager didn't supply the proof from the fire marshal, but I could certainly do that, that they required that the building, the access there be closed off. So we went through the whole, you know, process with the city and the Historical Landmarks Board. A permit was issued, and we've begun work, and it's just been super difficult, you know, the restaurant business with COVID and you know, all the regulations. But I want to comply, and I want to make sure everybody's happy, but the same time, I need to be given a fair shake, and I wasn't notified, due to my address change. And so this hearing and all this is kind of brought onto me sort of a little bit by surprise. I was given, you know, short notice to get ready for this. And I welcome your input. I want to work with you. Like I mentioned, I applied for the permit. Now that I know that I had to do it, I applied to the permit with you guys. I submitted the paperwork, and the application fee. I hand carried a $400 application fee down there, and you guys were closed. The security guard said nobody was around. So I put the check underneath the door. I'm hoping that you got it, but I'm still not 100% sure that you did get it. And I haven't heard back anything from BCDC regarding the application, permit application that I put in. So, I think that the fine is heavy. I don't think it's fair. I was required to close the building off, and I want to comply. You know, like I said, I hired an architect and engineer and submitted the plans and the fee, and I'm open to your comments.
So are you finished, Mr. Henry?
Do I get a chance to speak again, or is this it?
This is it, unless members of the committee have any questions for you.
Okay. I don't understand what cease and desist means.
Stop what you're doing immediately.
I understand that, but all the repairs, the fire have been made. So we put it back as it was. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Henry. We appreciate your comments. And so now I'm going to ask committee members for their questions, we'll get to the discussion after we ask for public comment. So clarifying questions on behalf of committee members. Anybody?
Question.
Letty.
My question, you said you had no notification from BCDC. When do you say that you first had notification from BCDC?
When I received an email from my attorney, Bill Hatcher, he sent me an email, and that was it was about 30 days before this hearing. It was a notification that this hearing was going to happen. I got an email from Mr. Hatch, my attorney, just saying, get in touch with BCDC, regarding this hearing. I moved away during COVID, and I didn't get I moved away in 2020, and you guys had my old address.
So you say that you had no notification from BCDC until just like very, very recently. I'm having trouble seeing how that would work because anything else to say? You're saying that you just heard from BCDC just very, very within the last few weeks.
I would say within the past, there was an extension. Rachel gave us, I think, a 30-day extension. He sent me an email saying get in touch with BCDC. They're going to have this hearing. And then I think Rachel went back or the BCDC staff went back and re-noticed it again and gave another 30 days. So it's short notice. But all through COVID, I didn't receive anything. During that, when the fire happened and it burned the back of the building off, I didn't receive any written correspondence from BCDC at all.
So it sounds like you basically didn't know anything about who BCDC is and what they do.
No, I wouldn't say that. I worked with BCDC before during the issues with the previous tenant, Piccolo Cafe, when he asked that somebody from the public buy a sandwich or leave. And I have been in touch with BCDC over the years, but during that period during COVID, when I moved away, that I didn't receive any correspondence. But prior to that, when the previous tenant was there, Mark Morrow, who left owing me a lot of rent, by the way, and I had to evict. All during COVID, I didn't receive anything.
Okay, go on. I see John has his hand up.
Okay, John?
Yeah, thank you. This is a question of Mr. Henry. When did you employ your attorney on this issue?
I think when we had I haven't actually employed him, but when we had a call with Rachel, I had him on the line, but I don't have an attorney per se. He was on the call with Rachel. We did a sort of a compliance call. I wanted to make sure that the team was together to make sure the plans were together and in order that they were supposed to be. And so I had him on the call. I don't even know if he's on the call today, but I don't you can tell me. I haven't talked to him.
This is Tim. I am on the call. Okay. Hi, Chris. I am on the call, but I think Mr. Vasquez may have been asking about the prior attorney.
Oh, he's just the process notice person for the LLC. That's all he. That's all his function is. He was when I initiated the LLC, I don't know, 13 years ago. He was the notice person. That's it. That's all the only involvement he has, or has ever had.
Okay.
All right, Rebecca.
Yeah. So maybe Rachel can help clarify this, but it sounds as if there was no assignment to an attorney to be the appointed person to receive notifications. I don't know what happened with, if you move, obviously you usually submit something to the post office so that whatever is sent to you is forwarded. But the notion that the respondent didn't get any notifications, Rachel, I wonder if you could just sort of respond to what you've just heard that.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. There were email communications between BCDC staff and Mr. Henry dating back to, I believe, 2021, which were made a part of the record. They are exhibits to the violation report and complaint and the recommended enforcement decision that show that he was clearly notified about the fire repair project and blocking public access being an issue with BCDC. We were requesting that documentation from him over email, and he was responding over email. And then there was a brief mailing issue with the violation report and complaint that we mailed. It was returned to us as undeliverable, so we did reissue it, and we, by doing that, we did reschedule the hearing date to today. It was, I believe, previously scheduled for likely early February. Mr. Henry got in contact with us when he did receive the reissued violation report and complaint. We've been in regular communication since January 31st. And I believe also to respond to the question about when he employed his attorney, Bill Hatcher is just the agent of service. So he acknowledged that he received it as well. And Tim Galusha, who's on the phone, we had that compliance call on February 27th. And if I may, the information about the tenant being responsible for all of those violations, that is new information to us and is not part of the record. So I would caution you to consider it today. And yeah, I think that's all I have for now. Hopefully that answers your question.
It does, Rachel, and thank you for bringing up the issue about the tenant, because, and I see that Greg is on the call, but generally speaking, if somebody owns a property that is subject to BCDC jurisdiction, I don't think that can be assigned. Those obligations cannot be assigned to a tenant without BCDC's permission. So I think I'm hearing you say that we don't have anything in our files that says the tenant is hereby responsible for the permit requirements and not the owner. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Henry was the respondent for all of those previous enforcement cases.
So my comment about that would be is, yes, the permit does run with the land. He is the owner of record. And so therefore he is responsible for compliance with all aspects of permit. And I find it a little bit incredulous
for him to say that he didn't know that he had to comply with BCDC permits, since the record clearly shows a past history of dealing with BCDC, I think as far back as 2016. And so for him to say that I didn't know I had to get permits from BCDC, or I didn't at least have to check with them, I have a hard time really accepting that. I have a question, and this is very sort of esoteric, but I want it for my own edification. So the record said that staff urged the respondent to get a permit amendment as opposed to a regional permit. Could you explain that thinking? And I think, did he apply for a regional permit or a permit amendment? I'm not sure.
Mr. Henry applied for a region-wide permit instead of a permit amendment, and the application was only for the fire repairs and not for the restaurant renovation. Region-wide permits are for essentially de minimis projects, and they don't require public access in order for us to issue them. Whereas an amendment to the region-wide permit would allow us to consider new public access considerations in lieu of the years of closure and the unauthorized work. And it would also be an opportunity to formally assign the permit to Mr. Henry.
So in asking for region-wide permit, he was only seeking to bring into compliance the fire portion, but not the restaurant addition and not the public access. So basically, he was non-responsive to BCDC's requests. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I see Mr. Henry's hand up. I will allow you one quick comment.
Thank you. This is the first time that I've been through this process, and the architect, I'm not sure if he's been through this process before, or if he's on the call, but the permit application should have been for the restaurant as well, not just the fire repair. So we want to make sure that we do that right. You know, that was an oversight on either his part or my part. We want to make sure that we're clear that it's for the restaurant and the fire repair.
While I appreciate that comment, Mr. Henry, we are charged with what is on the record, and what is on the record is a permit for the fire repairs, not the restaurant. And so if you would want to bring the restaurant into compliance, that is clearly another permit. And I urge you to have a discussion with staff outside of this procedure. Okay, do I have any other clarifying comments from committee members before I open it up for public comment? Rebecca.
I just want to be sure. I have some questions about the fine and payments and things like that, but you're saying that after public comment, we'll have a chance to discuss all of that?
Correct.
Great, thanks.
Okay. Ms. Klein.
Thank you, Chair Gilmer. Apologies if this is clear, but I just want to make sure that we all understand there is no permit for the fire repairs yet. He has submitted an incomplete application. So the fire repairs remain unauthorized along with all of the other work that has taken place at the site.
Oh, thank you very much. That is a very good clarifying comment. Okay, so going on to, do we have any public comment on this matter?
We do not, Chair Gilmore.
Okay, so we're going to close the non-existent public comment. And okay, committee members, it's time for discussion. And Rebecca, you said you had some questions. So I'm going to start off with you.
Yes, I do. So just as a preface, you know, when you own property on the edge of the bay, which is a public benefit, the bay, you know, it carries with it these obligations. And I understand that COVID and running a restaurant and all of that is difficult. But the obligations to the public have to be considered always when you are lucky enough to own property on the edge of our beautiful bay. The six items that Rachel listed that we want to have happen, the cease and desist, et cetera, what I am hoping is that with respect to each one, so that there is no coming back and say, I didn't understand, I didn't get it, I wasn't aware, that the consequences of not doing any one of those things is spelled out for the respondent. So if you don't, within 45 days, pay the fine, et cetera, the consequence is that the fines will continue, or whatever the consequence is, or consequences might be. So that, because I'm afraid that some of the situations that we have, people say, well, you know, what's the worst that could happen if I don't do that? I want them to understand, you know, that penalties will continue, you know, further action will be taken, et cetera, so that we really have some solid compliance with the decision we made today. Is that something, Greg or Rachel, that we can make sure to spell out in the decision?
The terms of the proposed commission cease and desist order do state that the respondent must strictly conform to the express terms of the order, and that if Mr. Henry intentionally or negligently violates any part of the order, that he may be liable for $6,000 for each day that the violations persist, and any failure to comply with the cease and desist order, the Attorney General may petition the Superior Court for the issuance of a preliminary or permanent injunction or both, restraining Mr. Henry from continuing any activity in violation of the cease and desist order. So that's probably about as firmly as it's written so far.
I think that's good. And is there a cap on the $6,000 a day, or does it just continue ad infinitum?
It continues infinitum. In fact, for other people, it's gone up over a couple million bucks at times.
Okay. And one quick question. There was a $21,000 penalty that you described for us. Was that paid, and was that paid timely?
It was paid. I believe that there was a settlement agreement at that time to allow for it to be paid in installments. And I'm not sure over how long, but I have no information about whether those installments were paid on time or not.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Anybody else? Okay. Okay, if there are no other comments, can I have a motion and a second to approve the executive director's recommended enforcement decision regarding the two proposed stipulated, well, actually, hold on, I'm ahead of myself, staff recommendation. Caught that.
Would you like me to make the recommendation again?
Please.
Okay.
Just so we're clear for the record.
Sure. Should I share my screen or just read it?
Why don't you just read it?
Okay. Staff recommends that the enforcement committee votes to recommend that the commission authorizes the executive director to issue the proposed cease and desist and civil penalty order number CCD 2024.001.00. Is it okay if I paraphrase the order terms? It would order the respondent, Mr. Henry, to cease and desist from violating BCDC permit M1979.088.02 and the McAteer Petrus Act to fully restore and maintain the public access area within 30 days of order issuance, to obtain a permit or permit amendment for all unauthorized work by December 31st, 2024, to complete a permit assignment form for the 1979 permit within 45 days of order issuance, to cease and desist from any development of the ground floor space, and to not conduct any business or other use of the space until a commission permit that authorizes such use is obtained, and to pay $60,000 in administrative civil liability within 30 days of order issuance.
Thank you. Now may I have a motion and a second on the recommended enforcement decision?
Excuse me, is it, I don't know if it's too late, but I was wondering if somebody could explain the 60,000, where that number comes from. Like, why is it that the number?
Who is that?
That was the respondent. Rachel, could you summarize just very quickly?
Sure.
Just before we...
I believe that was Tim Galusha and not the respondent, but happy to summarize. So the commission's regulations require us to consider certain characteristics of the violation. It's helpful to take a look at Appendix J of the commission's regulations to help answer this question. There's sort of a whole rubric that we go through and a whole process that we go through when analyzing the violations. So that helps us settle on the extent of deviation from the statutory requirements, as well as the gravity of harm of the violations. And those basically land us at a certain daily penalty, and that daily penalty amount is then multiplied by the amount of days that that the violation persisted. So that landed us at a daily penalty amount of $1,600 per day, but since the violations persisted for 937 days, they are capped at $30,000 for each violation.
Okay, thank you, Rachel. Okay, now I'm looking for a motion and a second to accept the staff recommendation.
I move to accept the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it was moved by Commissioner Eisen, and was it seconded by Commissioner Vasquez?
No.
Dylan. Thank you.
Before we move on, can Greg explain the process after this? Is a recommendation of the full commission, is it not?
Yes.
And that Mr. Henry will have an opportunity again to speak before the full commission?
That's correct, he will.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Adrian, would you please call the roll?
Yes. Commissioner Balin, or Committee Member Balin?
Yes. Aye.
Commissioner Vasquez?
Yes.
Commissioner Eisen?
Yes.
Commissioner Gilmore?
Yes.
Motion passes by 4.
Motion passes by a vote of 4-0. I want to thank all the commissioners and staff and the respondent. So our next item on the agenda is adjournment. Does anybody object to adjourning this meeting? Hearing no objections, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.